You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and if you haven't noticed yet, and I'm sure you have, especially our friends on the Iowa side of the river, the 2024 presidential race has officially begun with several candidate announcements and already some candidate visits to the state. My guest today will kick off what I hope is conversations with all the candidates and potential candidates. He's former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, who is not yet a formal candidate, but is strongly considering a run. Governor, thank you so much for taking the time to be on today.
Robin, I'm glad to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, as you're taking a look at this, and I can appreciate all the elements involved in making the final decision. Where are you at in the process, Governor? And when do you think you'll make a decision? And what are kind of the key factors involved in deciding whether to take on a momentous decision like this?
Well, it is momentous. It's nothing more challenging than running for the highest office in the land. But it really started last year while I was governor. I had the occasion to be in Iowa. I was in South Carolina, New Hampshire, and I was working on what I saw as important changes for our country. In other words, to have a more conservative approach to our government in terms of energy policy, in terms of controlling spending, in terms of the border. And so I saw a great response to that. And that caused me to look at this even more seriously. And so this year has actually moved slower in the 2024 race than I think everybody expected. Originally, I thought January would be the kickoff time for everybody. Former President Trump jumped in there. But then it was months before anyone else did. And so we're still looking at it. But the response I'm getting indicates that I need to make a final decision in April. I'm very serious about it, and I look forward to being back in Iowa again, as well as in some of the other states, to talk about a consistent conservative message for our country and the fact that my life experiences reflects that, both as governor in Congress and in key positions in the administration.
Well, Governor, to introduce yourself perhaps to listeners, well, on both sides of the river, our audience goes into Illinois as well. But what are say three major accomplishments as governor that you achieved that you'd want to share with people that kind of tell about the qualities you have that would make you a good president?
Well, thank you, and I was very proud of the 8 years as governor. Nobody expected that I'd have to lead through a pandemic, but that's what came our direction. And the leadership during that time was important for our state and nation, where we kept our schools open in that fall of 2020 for in-classroom instruction. I never gave in to the pressure nationally to shelter in place and to say, this business is essential and this business is not essential. I looked at that and I said, if you're a business that's producing something and you're providing a job for a family, you're essential in my judgment. And we kept them all open. We didn't make that distinction between essential and non-essential businesses. And so the leadership through that time has been important. But what I'm very proud of is the fact that we created over 100,000 jobs in Arkansas. I brought United States Steel from Pennsylvania into Arkansas, competed, won that, and it was because of the ease of doing business in our state, the regulations that we made workable for a large $3 billion investment in our state, over 900 employees. One thing that's important for any leader is to balance the budget. And in Arkansas, we balance the budget every year. Not only balanced the budget, but I also created record amounts of surplus and reserves for our state. And it's not from raising taxes, because we didn't. We lowered taxes, and that's another success story. And even with lowering taxes, putting records amount into education, we still balanced the budget and created a surplus. Management of the state's finances is very important. And we did control spending. We have 3,000 fewer state employees now than when I first got elected governor. And we didn't fire a massive amount of people. We just simply said, whenever you leave government, we're going to look at ways that we can be more efficient in that operation. And we actually reduced the footprint of state government in that way. And so, you know, from creating jobs to balancing the budget, protecting children. But one thing I'll mention I'm very proud of as governor is the fact that we led the nation in computer science education. When I started, we had 1,100 students that were taking computer science. We actually required it to be offered in every high school. And I encouraged our students to take it. And we went from 1,100 students taking computer science to over 23,000. And that's in a small state like Arkansas. But it gives these young people an opportunity for technology, for good paying jobs, to work anywhere in our mobile society. And now we require it as a credit for graduation. And so that's in each of those things are important nationally, from managing the budget, controlling spending, to investing in technology education so we can compete with China, to continuing to grow the private sector of our economy. That's what I did as governor, and that's what I think is important for our nation.
I'm glad you mentioned the budget, because with the Republican takeover of the House of Representatives in Washington, the budget deficit has moved up to some of the key issues being talked about now. And for our listeners, many of you, I'm sure, aware, we've got a very intelligent group listening, but states have to balance their budgets. That's in their constitutions. Federal government doesn't. So, you know, you've got pressures. Social Security, as you know, Governor, there's a split within your party. Former President Trump wants to not touch Social Security and Medicare. Some Republicans have talked about ways of reforming those programs. There's pressure to increase defense spending with everything going on in the world. What are some of your principles on how to reduce the deficit and eventually move it towards balance in Washington?
Well, we've got to do that. And the first thing is just to be able to have Congress tighten the belt in terms of spending. And sure, we do have to invest in our military, and that has to be a priority whenever we are supporting Ukraine, whenever our military is depleted in terms of their artillery, their you know, the equipment that they need. So we need to invest in that supply chain. We also, I do believe that we have to strengthen Social Security and not diminish it for our citizens that have paid into that. We have to look at both Medicare and Social Security over the long term, and there's ways that you can strengthen it without diminishing it or without, you know, changing the retirement age, for example. So we do need to strengthen it, and there's ways that you can look at to do that that we've got to consider. But let's not put it on the table for the chopping block. We can move toward a balanced budget, reduce the deficit, notwithstanding that commitment. And you ask, how can we do that? And it's all about unleashing the power of the private sector of our economy. We have got to have a pro-growth strategy in our taxes so that, you know, businesses want to invest here in the United States. You know, Biden's proposal to raise corporate taxes is going to drive corporations and businesses away from America. And that's not how you grow the economy. And if you don't grow the economy, we're never going to balance the budget. And so that is a key part of it. Have a regulatory environment that makes sense. You've got, and that is pro-growth and partnership, and it's in the way it's executed. And then have a tax structure that encourages investment and growth and job creation. Whenever we grow the private sector and unleash that, you're going to see our budget balanced.
I wanted to talk about a couple issues that I you know, most people I talk to consider themselves kind of in the middle, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, and they scratch their heads and think, why can't our leaders come to compromise on issues like the next two I'm going to mention? One's border security. We were close to a compromise years ago, which would tighten border security, but also provide relief for the dreamers to enter the United States or to legalize the dreamers. What are your thoughts on the immigration issue, Governor, and how the two sides can come together, perhaps on something where each has got to give a little bit in order to pass some meaningful legislation to address this issue?
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned, I guess it was actually back in the Bush administration, they tried to have comprehensive immigration reform, and people didn't have confidence that we have a secure border, and so they didn't want to have immigration reform that included a legal pathway, a citizenship pathway for those illegals that are already here in our country. We're beyond that now. That's not going to work right now. What has to be in a bipartisan way is not comprehensive immigration reform, it's comprehensive border security. And so that is where you have to start. And we have to invest in better resources there. We have to have an immigration system that works. We have to adjust our asylum programs to make them balanced between protecting those that come here under oppressive circumstances in their home country with having a legal process to address those that's fair and effective. And most importantly, we have to go after the cartel. If you're going to secure the border, you have to be able to designate them as a foreign terrorist organization so we can use greater resources to go after them. When I was head of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, we actually partnered with Mexico to go after the cartel, and we were successful in bringing out elements of it and reducing their effectiveness. They have rebuilt their power under the Biden administration with more open border policy, and with President Obrador of Mexico giving a green light really to the cartels. They're stronger than ever. They're more dangerous than ever. They're a national security risk, and we have to develop a strategy to go after them.
What's your view on the wall? Should the United States move forward on completing the wall that President Trump began?
Short answer is yes. I was there within the last month. I was looking at the wall. I was there. And it is such a shame that when President Biden came in, he ordered stop all work on any improvements to the wall. And so you have millions of dollars of material, steel frames. You have all of things necessary to complete portions of the wall, and they're sitting there idle. And it's a travesty and waste of American taxpayer dollars. So we have to be able to continue the progress on the wall. It is not a solution in and of itself, but it is a part of the solution. And for example, the cartel, the traffickers will come in and they will use a blowtorch and they will cut out holes in that wall and they crawl through. So you've got to have patrols, you've got to have cameras, you have to have sensors and the infrastructure to respond to any breach and to obviously repair it. But the wall is a part of the equation, and there's going to be places that the wall is not practical. You're going to have to use technology as well as a physical barrier.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today, I'm very pleased to have on former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. If you're looking for a candidate with a really diverse and background that would qualify one for the presidency, this person, you know, is somebody to take a look at. Governor Hutchinson not only has experience at the executive level as governor of Arkansas, he served in the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, as you just mentioned, and he was a United States congressman. So quite a diverse background to prepare him for the awesome leadership of the presidency should he choose to run. He's talked a little bit about his view on some of the key issues and indicated he'll be making a decision on whether to run in April. The other issue, Governor, I was going to mention that seems, again, that seems to very open to a compromise is energy. It seems to me, and I don't like to editorialize my own views a lot, but it just seems like an all of the above strategy makes a lot of sense in the short term. Renewables long term, but in the short term, we're not going to be able to just cut off fossil fuels. And the other issue, talk about your energy policy generally, but the other issue, it seems to me, is that we're not really taking advantage of more is nuclear energy. And I know a lot of people get all worked up when you mention that, but it seems like it should still be on the table anyway. What do you think?
Well, I agree completely. And if you look at Arkansas, for example, we have a diverse energy portfolio. We have nuclear, we have hydro, we have traditional oil, but also more importantly, gas, fire generators, and then we have solar. So we're using multiple sources for our energy. And as a result, we're much more protected, resilient, whenever there is, an exceptional event that impacts us. And so this is an interesting time. You talked about bipartisan support. Prior to the Ukraine war, there was no chance of any bipartisan energy strategy because the Biden administration went far left, and they said, we do not want to have any hydro production. We don't want to have any carbon production, oil, we want to diminish the gas. And so it sent a signal to our producers that it's not worth investing in. And so production slowed. The Ukraine war started, and all of a sudden, this administration is not as green as it used to be. In fact, Biden has signaled that he is going to approve the oil exploration in the coast of Alaska and the Arctic area. And I fully support that, but he's had a shift. And I think it is one, he might be gearing up for an election, but also he's faced the reality that we have to be energy independent. We can't be going to Saudi Arabia and Venezuela and begging for energy. And our allies, we don't want them to be dependent upon Russia and Saudi Arabia as well. So we have to be able to produce more here in the United States, and it has to be inclusive. And we can do that. And I do think there's more bipartisan support for it now, but the key is consistency, because the Democratic left is going to say, yeah, let's produce. But then when, the demand changes just a little bit, they'll go all green again and it'll slow production again. And that does not allow us to encourage our producers to invest in a refinery or to invest in oil exploration.
Governor Hutchinson, I'm curious about your view on education policy. Now, I know as a governor, you're obviously aware that, education is mostly a state and local issue. However, I guess my question is this, and in light of Governor Reynolds in Iowa and the legislature passed a sweeping school choice plan. Again, it's a state and local issue, but do you feel our schools nationwide are adequately preparing students for the challenges of the global economy and what we face in the city, in the world, especially with the challenges from China and other countries? And what should be the federal role, if any, do you feel in education?
But we're not doing as well as we should for our children. We've got to do better. And that's why, as governor, I focused on computer science education and also improving reading skills. And you look at this nationally, I was chairman of the National Governors Association. And so we actually had 50 governors of states and territories sign a compact saying, we're going to advance computer science and invest in it in our schools in our respective states. And so you're right that the federal government does now have the lead in education. in terms of finances and standards. Those are left up to the states. But we can, as president, you can use your bully pulpit to improve access and to improve the quality of education and the direction of education to include parents, first of all, that parents should be involved and that the school should not undermine our values that we teach our children at home. This is extraordinary, some of the complaints of parents. And I think by and large, our teachers do a good job, but you know, parents need to have empowerment and they need to have choices. And that's why I applaud Governor Reynolds for her school choice initiative. I started that in Arkansas with our first school choice bill, but it was very modest. It was simply geared toward a very narrow segment of the population. We've now expanded it, and you see this happening all across the country where parents will have choices and they can make decisions that are best for their children. This is happening because parents aren't satisfied with what they're seeing in their local school in some instances. And secondly, I think they were empowered and felt a greater sense of responsibility coming out of the pandemic. They saw what more personally what their kids were getting or not getting, and they said, we've got to be more involved.
One issue very important here along the Mississippi River counties, and I'm sure you're aware of it in your briefings on Iowa and getting familiar with Iowa. You know, Iowa had more Obama-Trump counties than any state in the nation, counties that had voted for Obama twice and then Trump. A lot of them right here along the river. And what a lot of them have in common is they had a lot of the old factory towns that lost manufacturing jobs over the years. And one of the things I think that reasons Trump caught on so much in the Midwest was because he talked about that and bringing these jobs back. But it's not as simple as that, as you know. I mean, we've got to balance our interest trading. The world presents vast markets for agricultural goods, but yet many have made the argument that our manufacturing base has been decimated. You talked about U.S. Steel coming to Arkansas. How, as president, would you kind of balance out our trade agreements to ensure our exports have adequate markets, but also not perhaps be taken advantage of through some what are perceived as unfair trade agreements?
Well, you hit the balance correctly. And I look at, you know, our towns that have lost manufacturing. Many of those were in our state of Arkansas, many in Iowa, Illinois. And, you know, that's a tough time whenever a town loses a significant employer. But we adjust and we work hard to bring that back. And so, you know, in Arkansas, the Delta region is the most impoverished area, one of the most impoverished areas of our country. Well, it was the steel manufacturing that rose out of the Delta area. In fact, our cotton fields became steel mills. And so it's a very dramatic change. So I think part of it is just the mindset of America that we can produce, we can manufacture, we love to work with our hands and we're skilled at it. And we've got to work hard to reinstill that confidence in manufacturing here in America. And then secondly, I think it is appropriate that all of our technical manufacturing needs to be moved back from China. And I'm talking about the sensitive industries, those that we don't want to be dependent upon our competitor for, those that don't share the same values, you know. And so that we need to bring back. And then we need to compete. But you're right, on the trade side, you know, Arkansas, Iowa, you know, Illinois areas is all agriculture as well. And so we have to we produce so much, we need those global markets. We need to. And so if we're going to let other foreign entities invest in America, they'd better first have their markets open to us and our agricultural products. And so we've been abused in terms of trade so long, you know, we really have to fight hard to have other countries follow the international rules and make sure it's fair for America as well.
Governor, we're about out of time. I've got time for one more question, and I apologize. We didn't get to some very important questions, and I hope maybe if you choose to run, you can come back. And if you don't, I know you'll stay engaged and we could talk again. But I wanted to ask one final question. I'll ask all the candidates. I mean, it's going to be a diverse and deep field. There are some very qualified candidates running already. But if you jump into this, what do you see as your one competitive advantage that perhaps our listeners, that voters might weigh you more favorably, just in comparison with the other folks running?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, we all want to win. And I'm talking about a Republican nominee, we want them to win in November. And I think one of the things that's important, and these are things that I bring forth, is that you've got to appeal to independents and suburban voters as well. You've got to win with the base, but you've got to be able to expand the base of our party or we lose in November. So that's one thing that I understand, addition versus subtraction. Secondly, I think people like a proven leader, and I'm talking about a governor who has led a state, who has balanced the budget, who's had to make executive decisions that are very tough even during a pandemic. And that's something I bring that makes sense. And then, you know, we're all looking at the challenge with the border, fentanyl, our foreign policy issues. Well, the experience that I bring as head of the DEA in Homeland Security, working on national security issues, addresses the needs that we have today. And so I love many of the people that are looking at running in 2024. We get along. Most of us are friends. And I think we need choices. And I think choices give the American public a better product in the end. And I want a leader of America that is able to bring out the best of our country. And that's an important phrase right there. Let's don't have a leader that appeals to our worst instincts or that divides, but somebody that appeals to the best of America and brings out the best of us individually, in terms of our freedom, in terms of our leadership, in terms of our goodness. That's what I see in the leader that's needed.
Well, Governor Asa Hutchinson certainly has a record that's certainly provides all the qualifications to be president. And I think if you get in, you'll be able to offer that before the voters. And it's a very strong record. So I really appreciate you taking the time and good luck in your decision making. And I hope we're able to talk again.
I look forward to it, Robin. Thank you.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.